It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Under the current system, the party in power has the power to draw districts that serve their own interests by manipulating the political data and manipulating the lines to draw districts that preserve their incumbency, that protect their seats. In short, the legislators currently do not serve the interests of the people. They serve their own interests in drawing districts.
Attorney Greg Lusick of One Virginia 2021 talks about his organization and what fair redistricting would look like in Virginia. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about the growing movement for a minimum wage of $15 an hour. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 280, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. On November 10, in 270 cities and towns, tens of thousands of low-wage workers joined the Fight for $15 Day of Action, taking to the streets in the movement's largest nationwide demonstration to build worker power yet. 1 year out from the 2016 elections, the protests also looked to turn that power toward electoral contests, calling on candidates for public office to join the fight for higher wages, with the slogan, "Come get my vote." An estimated 1,000 protesters marched Tuesday night from the City Hall in Milwaukee to the auditorium where a Republican presidential debate was being held. The protest prompted the main debate's first question for the current GOP poll leaders, Donald Trump and Ben Carson, from moderator Neil Cavuto, who asked if they sympathized with the low-wage workers and would support raising the federal minimum wage. They both rejected any increase in the minimum wage, with Trump saying he thinks that U.S. workers' wages are too high, and Carson saying, "I would not raise it," asserting every time we raise the minimum wage, the number of jobless people increases, a claim that fact checkers immediately labeled false. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, another Republican presidential candidate, then said that he too opposes raising the federal minimum wage, currently stuck at a poverty level $7.25 per hour, asserting that doing so would make people more expensive than a machine. A curious statement given that the senator had previously said you can't live on $10 an hour, you can't live on $11 an hour. Still, the Fight for $15 movement is increasingly forcing the urgent need to raise wages to the center of the policy and political debates. And more public officials are responding positively to the momentum toward a $15 an hour minimum wage. At a rally with low-income workers, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced he is instituting a phased-in $15 an hour minimum wage for all state government workers by 2018 in New York City and by 2021 statewide, making New York the first state in the nation with a $15 per hour minimum wage for state employees. Mayor Bill Peduto of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, issued an executive order setting a $15 an hour minimum wage for all city employees by 2021. 42% of America's non-self-employed workers are paid less than $15 per hour, according to the National Employment Law Project's updated report, The Growing Movement for $15, which tracks the movement's meteoric rise. For more information, go to www.nelp.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the offices of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we are speaking with Gregory Lusick. He is an attorney and the president of the Board of Directors of One Virginia 2021. We are going to be talking today about his new organization, One Virginia 2021 and Virginia Redistricting. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here.
So would you tell our listening audience a little bit about One Virginia 2021? What is it, what its aims are, why it was formed?
One Virginia 2021 is a nonprofit corporation composed of a group of dedicated Virginians from all across the political spectrum who believe that our congressional and state legislative districts belong to the citizens of the Commonwealth and not to any legislator, special interest, or political party. Our mission is to advocate for the adoption of an amendment to the Virginia Constitution that would establish an independent, impartial commission to apply fair, objective, transparent redistricting criteria in drawing legislative and congressional districts after the 2020 census.
And I'd like to start talking about the current process for drawing legislative districts. I guess both the congressional districts as well as the state Senate and the state House of Delegates. How does that work now?
Well, currently under the Constitution of Virginia, redistricting is given to the General Assembly of Virginia. They have complete power to draw the legislative districts every 10 years. They have very sophisticated equipment that shows, in addition to population data, election results and political data broken down to by the precincts and census block level. This shows how each of these precincts perform on a political level. And under the current system, the party in power has the power to draw districts that serve their own interests by manipulating the political data and manipulating the lines to draw districts that preserve their incumbency, that protect their seats. In short, the legislators currently do not serve the interests of the people. They serve their own interests in drawing districts.
And so can you give us some examples of some really strangely drawn districts that are drawn that way to, as you say, manipulate the process and make it almost a one-party state in that particular district?
Sure, Marty. What you're talking about is districts drawn through gerrymandering. And let me just say a few words about gerrymandering, because that is defined as the deliberate manipulation of legislative district boundaries to advantage or benefit one particular party or group, or causes disadvantage or harm to an opposing party or group. It distorts the electoral process. It undermines democracy because it diminishes voter interest in elections, and it really renders legislative elections a meaningless exercise. It eliminates and reduces competition in elections. Unchallenged incumbents have less incentive to ascertain and represent the interests of their constituents. And we saw this just in the election last week. Out of 100 House of Delegates districts, 62 were unopposed. They had absolutely no contest in those districts whatsoever. And what do voters do? They stay home. Why bother to come out and vote if you don't have a choice? Gerrymandering also promotes partisanship and polarization. Compromise is impeded because folks become embedded in their own ideology, and that creates a lack of willingness to compromise, and that's where gridlock in government comes from.
And Richmond does seem to be particularly vulnerable to that, both on the congressional level as well as on the state senate and even House of Delegates level, that Richmond gets sliced up and added into the suburban and even rural areas.
That's true. Richmond is included in two different congressional districts. It's included in three different senator districts, and it's in several House of Delegates districts. And part of the reason for this, and you will see this in most urban localities around the Commonwealth. You can look at Fredericksburg. You can look at Martinsville. You can look at most of the urban areas are divided into two or three different districts. And that is to dilute the voting power of the persons who live in those cities. In most urban areas, the voters tend to be Democratic. So when Republicans are in charge of the redistricting machinery, they will divide up those cities and put them into different districts to dilute the power of those voters in the urban areas. And that's exactly what happened. It happened in Richmond, and it's happened in most of the urban areas in the Commonwealth.
So now I understand that there have been several litigation challenges to the redistricting in Virginia, one congressional and two the state senate and state house of delegate districts. So let's go through those and start first of all with the one that challenged Virginia's congressional districting.
Litigation is one of the means to achieve reform in the redistricting process. One Virginia 2021, our program is one of education, legislative advocacy, and litigation. In Virginia, there are three cases pending right now in various stages of decision that are challenges to the gerrymandering that occurs in Virginia today. The case that many people have heard about and has been around for the longest is the congressional redistricting case that was decided by a three-judge federal court here in the city of Richmond. And it was a constitutional challenge to the third congressional district. There are 11 congressional districts in Virginia. The third congressional district wanders from the city of Richmond and meanders down the James River, picking up precincts in Prince George and New Kent and Charles City County, and hops across the James River on into Newport News, Hampton, and then hops across the Bay Bridge to pick up precincts in Norfolk and Portsmouth. It is a highly gerrymandered district. It is a majority-minority district that was created to comply with the Voting Rights Act. And that was challenged on the grounds that it was a racial gerrymander, and that is that race predominated in the creation of the district. And a three-judge federal court agreed with that claim and held that the third congressional district was an unconstitutional gerrymander, racial gerrymander, in violation of the 14th Amendment. And it ordered the legislature to draw a new third congressional district. As it turns out, the legislature was not able to do that. So now it's in the hands of the court. And the court appointed a special master to actually receive plans and proposals for a third congressional district that would comply with the Constitution. One Virginia 2021 actually submitted a brief in that phase of the litigation. And we are now waiting. There were 11 plans submitted from various parties, and the special master is in the process of making a recommendation to the three-judge panel. And I expect that probably by the end of November, we may know what the plan that will be adopted by the district court will be in the congressional case.
So that takes care of the congressional district up to this point in time. And then there were the other two cases involving the Virginia State Senate and the Virginia House of Delegates. One's on appeal, one's pending. Tell us about those cases.
The second case that I want to talk about was pretty much the same theory in the congressional case. That was another case filed before a federal district court, three-judge federal court, and it challenged the House of Delegates majority-minority district as racial gerrymanders. And it was the same theory as in the congressional case, a different panel of judges, though. And this time, the attorneys who were defending the case, who were acting for the Republican drafters of the plan, got the message. And because the claim was that race predominated in drawing the districts. And the House of Delegates racial case is actually very revealing because the defense offered by the defendants in that case was that it wasn't a racial gerrymander, it was a political gerrymander. They drew those districts and packed African Americans into the minority districts in order to dilute Democratic votes in the surrounding Republican districts and to create safe Republican districts. And in fact, Chris Jones, who is the delegate from Suffolk and chairman of the Privileges and Elections Committee, actually testified in the trial in this case that they acted specifically, for instance, to draw incumbent Democrats out of their districts. And he said specifically in his testimony that he had requests from 75 or 80 different legislators to tweak and manipulate their districts in order to achieve political ends. And the three-judge court actually upheld the districting plan in that case in a 2-1 decision, in a decision written by Judge Bob Payne here in Richmond. He wrote a 158-page opinion where he really just found a host of rationales for why the districts were drawn the way they were, so he could reach the conclusion that race did not predominate, and in fact, partisan politics was the predominant factor. There was one dissenter, Judge Barbara Keenan, who was the Fourth Circuit judge on the panel, filed a dissenting opinion, and she thought that this case was on all fours with the congressional case. And the reason is that the legislature, when it adopted the minority districts, it adopted a threshold. All of those districts had to be at least 55% black voting age population. And that was the requirement that ran through all of those districts, including the congressional district and the 12 House districts. And she argued that that was sufficient in and of itself to prove that race predominated. Unfortunately, she was in the minority. It was a 2-1 decision. And that case now is on appeal to the United States Supreme Court.
Which leads us to the third case, the pending case, which is different than the other two in a couple of respects. One is that it's filed in state court. And the second is that I believe it's not based on racial gerrymandering at all. Could you tell us about this third case that is pending?
The third case has been filed in the Circuit Court for the City of Richmond. And this case challenges 5 House of Delegates districts and 6 state Senate districts solely on the grounds that they violate the Virginia constitutional requirement that districts be compact. And that's in the Virginia Constitution. And really, the only criterion for districting in Virginia is that districts shall be drawn to be compact, contiguous, and nearly equal in population. That's all the Virginia Constitution says. It ought to be easy enough to abide by those three simple policies, but in order to achieve gerrymandering and to manipulate the district lines, we have some of the most bizarre districts in the country. And Virginia is indeed one of the most gerrymandered states in the United States. This case alleges that the General Assembly completely ignored the constitutional requirement of compactness in drawing its partisan gerrymanders. And the argument is that politics and some of the other factors that were taken into account can't trump the Virginia constitutional requirement of compactness. And that's what the legislators did when they drew these districts. So this suit seeks a ruling and an interpretation of the compactness requirement that would require legislators in drawing districts to abide by the Virginia requirement that districts be compact, that they not possess bizarre shapes or meander along an outside political subdivision boundaries. And that case is very recently filed. It was filed in August, and it's still in the early stages. But One Virginia 2021 is backing that case, and we are very confident that we may get a ruling in that case that will help the process of redistricting reform.
And so you mentioned sort of a three-pronged attack by One Virginia 2021. Education, which you've talked about, litigation, which you've talked about, and the last would be legislative reform. What would you like to see the General Assembly do in the guise of legislative reform?
Our ultimate goal is to enact an amendment to the Virginia Constitution, which changes what I just mentioned about the process, and that is that redistricting is committed to the legislature, and they are simply required to draw districts that are compact, contiguous, and nearly equal in population. What we have proposed is a constitutional amendment that would take redistricting away from the Virginia General Assembly and put it in the hands of an independent redistricting commission that would use objective redistricting criteria to create districts that don't favor politicians or ensure their reelection, but rather provide fair and objective districts that are competitive in nature and serve the people of the Commonwealth, not its legislators. In this past session, in the 2015 session, we actually were successful in getting four bills passed out of the Virginia Senate. One of those bills did create a seven-member independent commission that would draw the legislative districts during the redistricting process. A second bill actually established a list, a series of objective redistricting criteria, including equal population, racial and ethnic fairness, compactness, contiguity of districts. And one of the most important aspects is it prohibited the use of political data in drawing the districts. And that actually passed the Senate unanimously. Our third bill would have created a statutory redistricting commission. In the event we couldn't get the Constitution amended, at least we wanted to do it through the code. And then a fourth bill actually, or would have, provided for a referendum in the November election, the election we just had, that would have allowed the citizens of the Commonwealth to weigh in on whether or not they wanted redistricting reform. All four of those bills passed the Senate and went over to the House of Delegates, where they were summarily killed in a subcommittee of the House Privileges and Elections Committee, without even so much on most of those bills as the opportunity for a hearing. So we will continue to work in the legislative field to try to achieve redistricting reform through the legislative process. Now, we are, again, preparing bills for the upcoming 2016 session, and we will be coming back again in 2017 with our constitutional amendments, because those bills actually must be filed and really considered during the odd-numbered legislative years. So that's why it's Virginia 2021. Because we have until the year 2021 to get this done. And we're not waiting until the last minute. We've started now. We've hit the ground running. We've already had success in the Senate with our legislation. We're involved in litigation. We've got an enormous educational program where we have speakers attending meetings all over the Commonwealth and addressing citizens in a variety of forums. And through education, legislation, and litigation, we intend to achieve, by 2021, a fair, impartial, independent redistricting process that protects the citizens of the Commonwealth and doesn't serve just the legislators.
So finally, if folks want to learn more or help out, what should they do?
I encourage folks to go to our website. It's www.OneVirginia2021.org, and that is all spelled out, OneVirginia2021.org. At the website, you can sign a petition. We have a page in which you can make a donation. We have upcoming events, rallies that can be attended. We have the legislative process. Everything an individual needs to know and learn about redistricting reform and how to achieve this very important objective is on the website. And so we would ask folks to become part of the One Virginia 2021 team and participate through the petition, through our fundraising efforts, and through our legislative activity.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Gregory Lusick. He is an attorney and the president of the board of directors of One Virginia 2021. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Marty.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If your finances are bad enough so you need a bankruptcy, are your abilities good enough to file it on your own? Join us next week when private attorney Jason Crumbine reveals the many pitfalls of filing a do-it-yourself bankruptcy in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on February 8, 2012. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrandt.